Welcome, my name is Joshua Gilliland. I'm one of the founding attorneys on The Legal Geeks. With me is Lisa Hawk at Everlaw, who has a very interesting legal career, and she agreed to join us today to help us discuss some of the privacy issues from Star Wars. How's the show been for everyone?
Enjoyable.
Excellent. Anyone pick up any cool swag?
Yeah,
you got a big grin. What did you get? Mount
that
Rushmore.
Is gorgeous.
That is.
I got the other one.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, I thought about getting both of them.
No, it's quite. That is pretty epic,
yeah.
And very, very cool, and welcome. So today we're going to talk Star Wars, and there's a lot to talk about with Star Wars. So much so that today's presentation and tomorrow's presentation are about 50% different, because in case there's any overlap, we just wanted to cover as much as possible. So let's take a deep dive into one of the first legal issues in Star Wars with who owns R2-D2 and C-3PO, because it's wildly complex, and it's a great way to understand property rights, because property in law school is understood as a bundle of sticks that you have dominion and control over. And droids are treated as property, and we'll get into that, and especially if you care about L3, you'll really appreciate this. So, the ownership history, which means, in order to understand who owns the droids, we have to look at their history through what we call tracing. So, we're introduced to R2-D2 on Naboo, where he's in Queen Amidala's service as they escape the blockade. After Amidala becomes a senator, R2-D2 continues in her service. So he's either state property or made a gift to her in some way, shape, or form, because now she owns him. C-3PO was built by Anakin. And this raises interesting issues, because Anakin was a slave, and issues with whether or not he could own property. However, when he leaves to go become a Jedi, C-3PO is left with his mom, Shmi Skywalker. Which is one of the things about the Clone Wars that bothers me. Jedi should not leave people in slavery, which was one of the things I loved about Solo, because they don't. So that was, Who takes a stand for civil rights? It was the droids. So, wonderful scene. C-3PO is separate property of Shmi Skywalker. So when Anakin comes back in Attack of the Clones, technically she has owned him for a decade or so, so would have C-3PO would have been hers, but she married in that time. Well, separate property stays the property of the spouse when they marry, unless there's a transmutation of property, like a written instrument or deed saying, like, I give you the half of my droid. So there's no evidence that that happened. So when Shmi dies, that means Anakin would probably be the owner of the droid, because there was the separate property issue. However, if there was a will or something else, Selig Lars, her husband, could have an ownership interest in C-3PO. But you can't own half a droid. That'd be crazy. So let her son have it. Now, there's the secret marriage. And ironically, secret marriages are legal in California. Why? Yeah. Why is that? Well, being the left coast, people were escaping intolerance and bigotry wherever they were for marrying who they wanted to marry in those rectangular states. And as they moved left, they want, like, you know what? Enough of this. So if they wanted to get married and not have family members mock them, they could get secret married. Who knew that could happen? Surprised me. Found that out while researching this. So secret marriages are valid in California. R2 and C-3PO would have been the separate property of the respective of Queen Amidala and Anakin until Padme's death. Now, at that point, there's a good issue that R2 and both droids would become fallen to the children, and we'll talk about that, but they're not old enough to take custody of the droids yet, because they're babies. So that would mean that Captain Antilles became the Bailee, to care for the droids until the children were of age. Now, this is where we get into some alternative theories. I don't buy that Padme died of sadness. Padme is a strong woman. She's a leader. She kicks ass. She takes names. She's not going to get depressed and die because her husband turned evil. That's like an insult to her. So when Anakin chokes her, that had to be the thing that actually killed her. Maybe he used the Force and crushed the life out of her cells. Something horrible that caused her to die, as opposed to she just got sad, because that's bad story writing. So if Anakin is the cause of Padme's death, physically committing battery upon her, that would cut off his rights, just as Obi-Wan cut off his limbs, so he could not take ownership of those droids. Because we don't want to reward spouses who kill their spouse. Just say like, hey, I killed my wife, now I get her property. No! That's not how it works. So, if that's the case, Anakin has no rights to the droids because of the battery he committed upon his wife. Now, get to A New Hope. Really strong argument that Leia exercised her ownership over R2-D2 by sending him on the mission to find Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's her exercising dominion control, like sending out a carrier pigeon or a really loyal golden retriever out on a mission to go get help. Go get help, boy. Like, that was the message that R2 had to go do. And if that's the case, good argument that she actually owned R2 at that point. However, is an escape pod like a lifeboat? Because derelict vessels, like lifeboats washed up on shore, are considered abandoned property, so all the property in them would be abandoned. So, escape pod lands on Tatooine, does that make it abandoned, and thus the droids thus abandoned? Thus, when the Jawas find the droids, they find abandoned property, so the Jawas would have had clear title to the droids, which means there would have been a valid sale to Uncle Owen. Which means when Bru and Owen are killed, Luke inherits them. Thus, when at the beginning of Return of the Jedi, when Luke offers the droids as a gift to Jabba the Hutt, that would have been a valid gift to Jabba. But then he rejected the deal, and you know, we'll talk more about that in a minute. Now let's talk about droid discrimination, something that that opening scene in A New Hope, where we get to the cantina at Mos Eisley's, and we hear the bartender Wurr say, "We don't serve their kind here." We expect that sort of thing to be in the graveyard of history. That, and despite what happened in Colorado, we can talk about that if people have questions, and what happened in Tennessee. We don't like that here. And when you look at California's laws, if you have a place of public accommodation, a restaurant, tipping house, whatever, we don't tolerate people who are jerks. You know, check your bigotry at the door if you're going to open a restaurant, because sing along with how broad our law is, that places of public accommodation have to serve you. And if they discriminate on sex, race, color, religion, ancestry, national origin, disability, medical condition, genetic information, marital status, sexual orientation, citizenship, primary language, or immigration status, they can get sued. Because that's not okay. Notice it doesn't say artificial life. And
sorry.
Yeah, hear me out. It's okay. Bear with me. So this is where things get weird for R2-D2 and C-3PO, because if they're going into the bar, like, do they need to own anything or order anything? On the flip side, we've kind of seen in the news recently, we don't like people who take that position. We also don't like the idea of, let's just say that you had a restaurant and you didn't want to serve anything for people who are gluten intolerant. And if somebody walked in who needed something like wheat-free and the reply was, "We don't serve your kind here," there would be a lawsuit, I guarantee. Because, like, we don't tolerate that kind of behavior. It's like cruelty. No. So, Solo really dealt with this. So at WonderCon, we did a mock trial with the droids suing for discrimination, which made me feel like we were really forward-looking. Because Carrie, after our mock trial, who she built her own R2-D2 unit who moves and beeps and all that cool stuff, and that campaign started with droids are welcome. She took her R2 unit to Denny's, and they did serve him. And she tweeted it, and the Denny's Twitter account retweeted it and tried to get Lucasfilm and her to like come back and so they could film a bit there. So, but yeah, no, she had her solo breakfast and was there with her R2 unit. So I like to believe we were on the cutting edge of that. We did our part. Well, let's talk about privacy in the law. And so, Lisa.
Yeah, so in my day job, I spend a lot of time in the privacy world, and I thought it would be fun to sort of explore how privacy law might work in the empire. And I'm guessing that a few of you have had some privacy policy updates coming into your inboxes probably over the last few weeks. You may have noticed this influx and be wondering, you know, what's that all about? It turns out that privacy is a big deal, and it even extends to the Star Wars universe. So I thought I'd explore that a little bit and see, you know, how was privacy treated at the dawn of the Empire? So it turns out that privacy actually was addressed and a thing in Star Wars, and they kind of went really big. They had this enhanced invasion of privacy bill, which was brought into the Senate during the Clone Wars. And so it was scheduled to be debated during that time, except of course the goal of this law was to subvert the privacy of the citizenship, not to protect it, which is unlike the European Union's new privacy and data protection law, which actually applies to a lot of companies in the US, hence your flooded inboxes recently. So what might have happened if the Empire had passed this bill, and what might have happened if they had access to all of the information of the citizens? So I thought, yeah, go ahead. So yeah, so if the Empire in Star Wars has had big data, there is a lesson to be learned. If you are an evil empire and you're trying to establish a surveillance state, then guess what? Having a lot of information and being able to collect it and spy on your citizens at will is a good thing for you if you're in charge of the Empire. So what kind of things did that invasion of privacy bill try to achieve? Well, the bill would allow the Supreme Chancellor Palpatine to spy on the citizens of the Republic basically at will, to collect any information that they wanted to get to figure out who was a separatist or suspected of being a separatist. So we know that this part of Star Wars and Palpatine and the storyline is actually based on real life dictators and real life historical events. But what you might not realize is that privacy as a human right comes out of the same history that the Star Wars storyline is actually based on. And so the impetus for the new law in Europe, which came into effect a few weeks ago, and again, hence your flooded inbox, the impetus behind that is actually rooted in the same history as the Star Wars storyline. So a little bit more about the actual laws here. I thought I would sort of reach back to the historical context of why privacy is viewed as a fundamental human right in Europe. And if you look back to the period after World War II, so between 1946 and 1948, which is when the UN was actually established and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights was put together, there is a right to privacy in there. And not too long after that, the European Convention on Human Rights, Article 8, establishes the individual's right to privacy under Article 8, which is respect for private and family life. So this historical background kind of helps us understand why privacy is treated as a human right in Europe, because of these post-war lessons on interference with citizens and the collection, the mass collection of personal information and data being used for abusive and horrific, horrific things, basically, after the war. So Europe has taken further steps to sort of counteract invasion of privacy. And so in addition to the Convention on Human Rights, several key directives, which are sort of regulations that apply to member states in Europe, were passed in the early and mid-90s. And then the European, the EU General Data Protection Act was passed in 2016 and just came into effect a couple of weeks ago. But the GDPR is such a far-ranging law because it applies anywhere in the world. So any company anywhere in the world that collects and processes the personal data of EU citizens is actually impacted by this law. So it's not only for companies in Europe, it actually reaches over, and in legal terms we call that long-arm jurisdiction, so it actually reaches over its long arm into the U.S. to U.S. companies, which is why we've seen a lot of U.S. companies in the news and you're getting flooded with privacy notices. So what happened back in Star Wars? Well, like I said earlier, this invasion of privacy bill was scheduled to be debated in the Senate. But unfortunately, the day it was due to be debated was the same day as the Senate hostage crisis. And the bounty hunter, Cad Bane, came in and, you know, took them hostage, and Philo's last act was to try to stop that from happening, and he was shot with the laser and killed. So we don't actually know if the bill passed or not, but it certainly, if it had, it certainly would be illegal in the context of the privacy laws in Europe that are on the books today. But what about in the U.S.? So I thought I would just spend one more minute talking about the U.S. Well, in the U.S., obviously, it's a bit different than in the EU. Privacy law is a bit messier. It's a patchwork of state laws and specific industries like the health industry, where your protected health information has privacy protections, and then the state laws and the FTC. So the FTC can regulate unfair and deceptive trade practices, which is how companies get caught up in their jurisdiction when there's a major data breach. But you have to prove harm, which is a whole separate thing. But in a nutshell, it's a lot harder to bring an individual cause of action for a privacy breach or a harm in the U.S. But with the new dawn of this era of GDPR that applies to a lot of companies in the U.S., we've sort of moved into an era of privacy awareness. And so there will be, you know, more consequences for companies as we go forward. And so I think what we're going to see is, you know, continuing sort of data wars among companies that their business models are based on collecting and using our personal data. But also, as a citizenry, we're all more aware now, even though we've had to deal with all these emails. But for the Privacy Jedi, there's a few resources out there. If you're interested in following sort of privacy developments around privacy, the Future Privacy Forum, EFF has a great series on surveillance self-defense, if you're interested in sort of tips about how you can protect your own privacy. And for my hackers out there, the DEF CON Crypto and Privacy Village has some neat resources. And for the avoidance of doubt, crypto means cryptography, not cryptocurrency.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about one of those big issues from Star Wars. All those poor stormtroopers. Now, those Ewoks come out of the trees and they just start dropping. Could they sue for defective body armor? Well, that would require us to figure out, was there an express warranty that the body armor would protect stormtroopers from projectile weapons? And digging into some of the visual guides, yes, that there is an express warranty from the manufacturer that body armor would expressly warrant all troopers to be protected from projectile weapons. So those little arrows and spears that start taking down stormtroopers on Endor, they should have been protected. So, if you were to sue the manufacturer, you would need to prove that all of these elements. So these are the jury instructions to prove a product is defective. So the Imperial Department of Military Research made a statement of fact that stormtrooper armor protected wearers from projectile weapons fire. that the plaintiffs relied on defendant's statement. A stormtrooper armor did not do what it was supposed to. The plaintiff suffered damages, and the damage to the plaintiff was caused by the defendant's failure to construct body armor that protected wearers from projectile fire. Now, but for defective armor, they should have won the Battle of Endor. They should not have been taken down by all those feral Ewoks that were just ravenous and out for blood. So, again, there is a good cause of action there, and that's actually based upon police officer cases suing for defective body armor, which had bigger issues. Well, let's talk about war crimes, because, you know, wouldn't it be terrifying if there was an elected leader that said the only way to stop the rebels is to take out their families? I mean, that'd be super scary if somebody thought in those terms that, you know, why don't we stop ISIS with a Trident missile? I'm like, what could possibly go wrong with something like that? So Tarkin took the position that it was military necessity to destroy Alderaan in order to get Leia to talk about where the rebel base is. The population of Alderaan was, what, 6 billion? There might have been a rebel cell there, and so in order to get one person to talk, let's threaten to blow up the planet. And after she did, they decided to blow up said planet. Would that be a war crime? What could it be? Well, if anyone hesitated, reevaluate your life. That is absolutely a war crime. We don't target civilians. You can't argue military necessity to do that. That would have been like us after 9/11, like, hey, let's just blow up Afghanistan. We could have done that. We didn't. Instead, we dropped food on them because there were people starving, and then we went in strategically because that's how you fight that, not blow up the planet. So military necessity gets into the concept that measures to subdue your opponent are relevant and proportional to the needs of the campaign. And in this, blowing up a planet is in no way proportional in order to get Leia to talk. Which then gets into the lovely issue of war crimes, because you're not supposed to target civilians. Now, there is an issue that if you're in total war, like World War II, you know, the Japanese had killed 25 million Chinese people, mostly with swords, but they also used microwave weapons and other horrible things. There was the Death Railroad, where they tortured and killed POWs, the Bataan Death March. So that's why we did firebombing and ultimately atomic bombs to end that war, because it was total war. Nothing like that has happened here. You have a peaceful planet that's not armed get blown up just because we want to show we're tough. No. It's great war crimes trial. Which brings us to the other fact that those feral Ewoks are war criminals. And I swear to God, it looks like you were about to shoot water through your nose, so I am sorry. If you watch the Forces of Destiny animated, you know, shorts that they have on YouTube, they're lots of fun, generally geared towards the female audience because they're showing strong female characters. And in this one, Leia stops the Ewoks from eating POWs.
We stopped them at the Battle of Endor.
Yeah, and I don't know who had seconds, but you know that's pretty disturbing that the Ewoks were hungry. So what they were going to do? They were going to eat the stormtroopers, and they had them lined up on pikes. Wicket looks like he actually hits one of them, and they were going to make the stormtroopers watch their buddies get rotisserie cooked for an Ewok feast. There are so many things wrong with showing that to a 5-year-old, I don't know where to begin. But those are war crimes. And, you know, hitting a tied-up POW, that's a war crime. So Wicket commits a war crime and striking a tied-up POW. Forcing stormtroopers to watch their countrymen get rotisserie cooked, war crime. Cooking someone is cruel and unusual punishment, you know, because it's bad. Where are those stormtroopers? There are their helmets. What happened to them? The act of killing a stormtrooper for dinner is murder.
Oh, that's
And now you might wonder, like, this is really, really horrible. Based on something real. So the island of Chichijima, which was near Iwo Jima, was a Japanese radio station. Five pilots get shot down. Four land on the island. The Japanese, the officers, have a perverse view of their Shinto beliefs. So they have those men killed and they eat their livers, thinking that that would give them strength. The fifth pilot was an Avenger torpedo pilot. He held on as long as he could after hitting his target. His two shipmates, he had them bail out first, and they're never seen again. They don't know what happens to them. He bails out, hits the tail, lands in the water, inflates his life raft, fights off shark, is picked up by a submarine, goes home, marries his sweetheart, does well in the oil business, is eventually chairman of the Republican Party. He's then ambassador to China. He's then the director of the CIA, serves two terms as vice president, one term as president, and has a two-term son president who's was arguably the bravest president we've ever had when you look at all the stuff that he did. And that was George H.W. Bush. Only one to survive that, because he didn't land on the island. But how do we prosecute those Japanese officers? The Geneva Convention doesn't have cannibalism as a war crime. They were charged with murder and desecration of a corpse. And we didn't know how to tell their family members, "I'm sorry, your son was eaten." It took decades because our government didn't know how to tell family members something so horrible happened to them. Now, this is told in great detail in Flyboys. It's a wonderful book. Highly recommend it. And it ends on a positive note that with war we can become friends at the end and move forward. And the guard who took care of the last POW to be killed befriended him. And he was like super upset with what happened to his friend. So he changed his name to take the pilot's name after the war. So there's hope for humanity, but those Ewoks are little bastards. cooking people's mutilation and maiming, and slow roasting over a rotisserie pit, yeah, that would definitely result in serious bodily harm. But don't worry, Leia stops the barbecue.
Once.
Once, yeah.
So let's talk about the insanity defense. So, can you be addicted to the dark side? And there's a defense with drug addiction, that if drug addiction destroyed somebody's ability to distinguish between right and wrong, or make them act under a delusional compulsion, that could be a form of the insanity defense. Well, let's talk about whether or not that means the dark side is an addiction, or is it a lifestyle choice? Let's focus on the abridged crimes of Ben Solo. So there's murder. He orders the deaths of civilians, which is right out of the My Lai Massacre. There's workplace bullying. There's kidnapping and torture. He destroyed the New Republic. There's a coup d'etat to impress a woman. And of course, the big one, the thing that bothers every Gen Xer out there, homicide. Because most Gen Xers think of Han Solo as their patronus. So this is really struck hard for me. But did the dark side destroy Ben Solo's ability to distinguish between right and wrong, or did it make him act under a delusional compulsion? And Lisa, what do you think?
I don't know. I think that his record makes it hard to argue that he actually was insane, because if you look at the homicide particularly, there is that point where he knows what he's doing and he talks about, you know, the struggle. So I think it would be really hard to argue that he was acting in a delusional capacity and that he didn't know that it was right or wrong. And then,
just because he has nice hair doesn't mean he gets a free pass. Or the fact that he woke up with Luke standing over him with a lightsaber. Now, the thing to do is like, what the hell? That would be the correct response to that. Not go kill seven people immediately. It's really hard to reform him. Let's talk about the fact that the First Order recruits by kidnapping children, turning them into child soldiers, and morale so low they actually have to assign people to behead traitors. So that's all bad, which gives me another theory that we could talk about at the end. But Lisa, what are your thoughts on beheading traitors?
Well, I think, as you sort of alluded, there's a bit of a problem with that, right? So if you summarily execute somebody, that deprives the person, of course, of due process of law. They don't have the right to engage counsel. There is no right to a trial there. You know, basically, no nothing. So, you know, I think Josh can talk a little bit about how there actually is a basis in law for execution, especially in the military.
Yeah, so we have a long history of executing spies, but that's after a court-martial. So, like, if we catch a bad guy spy, they would be tried, and they can't be executed. That goes back to the Revolutionary War. But there's always a trial, not get on your knees and we're going to finish this now. We don't do that because we're supposed to be the good guys. Now, Captain Phasma might think, what do you mean we can't just behead people? She purposely picks that because it would hurt more. Sick. So, summary executions are just condemned across the board. You don't get to do that. And then the other half of this is, beheading people with laser axes would meet the definition of cruel and unusual punishment because there is an objectionable intolerance that there will be a risk of harm to that. So just super bad. Super bad, and we wouldn't allow people to be beheaded. So the real villain of The Last Jedi is Poe. He gets over 375 people killed. The resistance fits in the Falcon. So Poe starts by ignoring Leia. Doesn't mansplain to her. He just turns her off. Okay, a little. There's another theory I have that he just doesn't like people older than him. But he turns off the radio on Leia and then proceeds to get the entire bomber crew killed. All of them. Because he can't listen. He then does a mutiny. So we have insubordination and mutiny that results in everyone getting killed, except for the lucky few who survive. He should be court-martialed and executed. There's no way around what he did was wrong. And I agree there is mansplaining and misogyny, but he's also the one holding Leia's hand and being more the dutiful son when she's incapacitated. So I have mixed feelings on whether or not he was loyal to Leia and just didn't like Holdo. But on the flip side, he did get a bunch of people killed, and Holdo should have had his butt thrown in the brig because everything stems back to him and all the bad things that happened to the resistance. So let's talk about, you should be a nerf herder. Let's take a look at the original footage.
Even I get bored sometimes. Do you think I had a choice? My dead body.
Yes, I'll
bet you have.
Ah, the 70s. So, let's break that down. Facts matter. And the test for self-defense in California, because it varies state by state, we are a stand your ground state, which goes back to the beginning of California, back to 1850. So, like, this isn't new. But self-defense requires that the person who's attacked reasonably believes that they're in imminent danger. They don't have to retreat, but they can stand their ground, and they can use lethal force as necessary. Well, let's break down the facts with Han. We have the statements that are made that are threats. It's from a bounty hunter. A gun is pointed at him the entire time, and he's seated in a corner and can't go anywhere. So even if he was bound to retreat, he couldn't, because there's no place to go. Objectively, I think he was right, because there was absolutely no question that his life was in danger. He'd just been threatened with death, and he knows that he's in the Mos Eisley's cantina, the hive of villainy and scum. Good people don't hang out there. He was right to shoot. Lisa, your thoughts?
I think the facts speak for themselves.
He fled the scene. That shows
you. Yeah, but you know what? So, okay, this is where we get legal advice of don't go out and get in situations where, somebody's going to shoot you. Make good life choices. Don't be a smuggler. Get a good degree. Don't do that. But if that happens, Han was right to shoot. And if you saw Solo, I'm working on a post about when Han first shot first, and he was right there. And that's defense of others for saving Chewbacca. So there's a lot to unpack with Star Wars, and Star Wars is one of the richest areas to discuss the law, because you all love the facts. You all love these movies. And I was born in 74, so I really don't remember the first time I saw Star Wars. It's always just been with me. I do remember Empire. So, and I know so many people care deeply about these films and what this means. It's go out and celebrate it. And there's been kind of the nastiness on social media with what happened to Kelly Marie Tran this week. Just go out and be decent to each other. And, to borrow from Bill and Ted, be excellent to each other, because it's just, fandom is a beautiful thing and it's supposed to be fun. It's why we're here. And you look down there, there's tons of people who are just having fun, getting all the things that they like, and we're hanging out together, being able to discuss Star Wars or Kaiju and everything else. And with that, any questions for us? Yes, sir.
Just a little quibble. Mm-hmm. That part you had about Poe, you were listing the U.S. Code. Shouldn't it actually be the Uniform Code of Military Justice?
That is from the U.S. Code of Military... Yes, yes, they overlap.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yep. Yes, ma'am.
So, when Padme dies, the argument is that her death is caused by battery from Anakin, and therefore the droids fall under children's ownership. But I thought we established that 3PO and R2 were separately owned, so wouldn't 3PO still be owned by Anakin?
We didn't get into that, so good question. Technically, yes, but there's a really good argument that Anakin abandons 3PO because he doesn't go back for him, and there's an abandonment issue. And at two different cons, younger people have seen Starlin. Younger people have said to me that somebody on Reddit said that the droids were gifts, wedding gifts to Anakin and Padme, and my reaction to that is, give me a citation, because Reddit's not a citation. That's somebody just spouting crazy talk. So if there's a visual guide, if there's a book, if Claudia Gray said so, give me something that we can look at to say, okay, it was in episode 3 of Clone Wars, then I'd be good. But unless that that needs to be explained, because if they're community property, if they each have a ownership interest, it then would flow to the kids, no problem. If they're separate still, that does require abandonment by Anakin, which I think he does. You, sir?
To the droids being not allowed at the diner, they weren't discriminated, I don't think so, because throughout the all Star Wars, droids are property. They're a tool that has been used. Saying that they're not allowed in the diner is saying that no guns allowed, because C-3PO was shown to be just a passive surveillance who records everything. You don't want that in a den of criminals. R2-D2 is known to store weapons and lightsabers in him. He has jetpacks. Honestly, I think it's a safety issue for the shopkeeper saying, like, I can't have those in there. Just like a no firearms allowed sign.
So have you read From a Certain Point of View?
No.
Okay, so that's where your argument falls apart, because one of the chapters is we're talking about what happens in the cantina when the droids come in and Han does his thing. He would be the defense attorney's nightmare client, because he admits he hates droids because his parents were killed by droids during the Clone Wars, and talks about in great detail the recurring nightmares he has seeing the smoldering bodies of his parents. So when you have a client who says, like, yeah, I hate them, you know, like, if it was any nationality, any race, like, that would be nightmare scenario of, like, no, it's, don't you know, like, my family was killed by the mob, that's why I don't allow Italians into my restaurant. Discrimination! It's like, you can't just say, like, well, all Italians are in the mob. No, that's discrimination. That's not how that works. So him going, all droids are evil and going to kill us at any point in time because they don't have a heart and they're all clankers and I hate the clankers, that is the nightmare client scenario. If it was based upon safety or something like that, that would at least be a better argument, or that they weren't ordering anything, you have a better case. But as Starbucks recently learned, that doesn't hold water with public opinion. So the fact he has a droid detector on the wall to go off when any droid comes by, also, kind of jerkish. Yes, sir?
Actually, I had a different take on that. It's more from the... And now, I haven't seen the new Solo movie yet, so there may be new things in here that repeat my point of view, but I look at the droids more as like dogs.
Yeah.
Like, basically, dogs are property. Very explicitly, dogs are not allowed in food establishments, mm-hmm. places like that. They're service animals. They're highly intelligent. They also have their own social interactions mm-hmm. and social life outside of their owners. As far as I know, in the entire Star Wars universe, even though, yes, the droids can talk and they are intelligent, they never seem to take issue with the fact that they are property or being used. So we can argue that they're sentient, so are dogs, but dogs never take issue with the fact that they are property.
I agree. So my point of view on this has been mostly from the service animal, their pets, type of thing, and even George Lucas talked about R2-D2 being the family dog, and so which is different. And this is a big issue in Solo, which also because of the mock trial we did, I got text messages saying, like, hey, we're pioneers. So they did a really good job in Solo on the droid rights issue. That's fantastic, and some of my favorite parts of it is what happens there. But I don't want to spoil it, which is why we didn't put any Solo material in here, because I want everyone to see it, because I love that movie. So, I'm not going to ruin it.
I guess follow-up then, in Rogue One, which one, would they reprogrammed the military bot?
Rogue One. That would be K2.
Yeah, so K2, they reprogrammed him. He seems to have more of an independent sense of self than any other droid I've seen.
Yeah, until you meet L737. Don't worry. They've done a lot of great work with droids, and because it's a great reflection of ourselves on how we want to treat others. You know, that's the wonderful thing about science fiction or science fantasy, that we can tell by analogy of, like, well, that's wrong. People shouldn't be treated like that. And, you know, like, that's how, you know, going back to Rod Serling, you know, like, he wanted to do stories about, you know, black people being discriminated against, and networks didn't want to cover it. But if you do it about aliens, it's okay. And so that's just, you know, it's a way to get people to think beyond and think, you know, more inclusive. Yes?
So I'm kind of going to be more into the war criminal thing uh-huh. on the Death Star. We know the Admiral is guilty. But how many people down the chain of command that follow the order to blow up Naboo, or
Alderaan?
Alderaan, sorry.
No, I would aim at the Gungan, so no, I get it.
How
how many people down the chain of command are guilty of the war crime? Like, who, because is the person who actually pushed the button?
All of them.
All of them, like the entire Death Star, if you serve
so,
on it,
so,
contractors?
So the, you have a duty to follow legal orders, you don't have a duty to follow illegal ones. And if the order is, if you can tell on its face that it's illegal, if we're going to go out and commit genocide, you don't have to follow it. Great example of that was the one guy at the My Lai massacre who threw down his weapon. There was only one. Now, there's the helicopter crew that saved a whole bunch of people, but there was one guy, and he's threw down his weapon and said this is wrong, and he wasn't going to partake in butchering people. And you know, he was absolutely right to do that. And it's why Finn was absolutely right not to massacre people on Jakku, because you can't hide behind saying, I was just following orders, when you slaughter innocent people.
But could you hide? Sorry, follow up to that. Hide under the duress, because the stormtroopers have seen Darth Vader straight up execute somebody who he didn't like. Could they have, say, a rightful fear for their life that they didn't follow this order, they would be killed?
No, you do not. You duress is not a reason to commit murder, and that's in case law. So, you know, I have zero sympathy for war criminals. That I was just following orders has never worked. You need a lawful order. And so that's why everyone who was under Lieutenant Callie's command should have either swung or been thrown into a prison. And the fact that Callie was the only one tried and then pardoned by Nixon and then spent the rest of his life as a jeweler in Georgia is appalling. And you don't get a free pass for war crimes.
There's a film about Adolf Eichmann coming out this fall where I think after his capture and they discuss his defense about how
and there's a few that are still going on right now. And
I can't remember the name of the film, but it's like they're showing previews on YouTube. So
it's a couple of Nazi guards.
Yeah.
Extradited.
That, you know, if you pull the trigger, you know, like we've prosecuted U.S. soldiers who, you know, they objectively should have known the order was wrong. If you have a prisoner face down on the ground and the higher ranking officer says shoot him in the head and you do, you're going to prison for life. And like, and that was out of the 1950s from a Korea War case. And so that's like zero tolerance for that. Because we're the good guys. We're not supposed to do that.
Did Luke have the right to shoot to destroy the Death Star?
Of course. Yeah, it's okay, you now have a rebellion because when your political philosophy is the doctrine of terror and we're going to go around blowing up planets, you have the right to self-defense. And you built the giant killing machine to go out and slaughter billions with the stroke of a pen. Yeah, go blow that sucker up. Moreover, assumption of risk, you went to work on the Death Star. It's not the happy fun ball. It's not the cuddle chamber. No, Death Star. No, go ahead.
Another party on the opposite side bring a lawsuit because of a defect in the Death Star that allowed it to be blown up.
So we're going to cover that one tomorrow. The answer is yes.
Okay.
I'm just following up on that. Like, nobody ever asks for a surrender from either side. Does that matter?
You know, the Imperials don't take surrenders.
Okay.
Yeah, they just keep killing. Or you look at the First Order in The Last Jedi, it was, give them no quarter, we're going to go finish this. It's like, that's not okay. You know, the Germans got in trouble for, you know, sinking lifeboats. That's just stuff we don't tolerate. Because we want to be a civil society. Anything else? I'm sure this has made everyone feel warm and comfy inside.
On the Death Star, just by manner of being on the Death Star, is instantly guilty.
Yeah, but this is where I'm going to bring up the end of Last Jedi. Luke, in theory, could have done the Force trick to stop all the blaster bolts from the AT-ATs and MT-ATs and just pushed them back. That would have looked awesome to see all those big walking tanks blow up and crash. But it was better to humiliate Kylo Ren in front of all of his men. It was better to show all of those stormtroopers who were forcefully taken from their families as children that this guy was not all powerful. Because the best way to recruit to, you know, for the resistance or the rebellion is from the First Order. And so if you got stormtroopers turning, going like, this is wrong, these guys are right, and our leader just got, you know, humiliated, we're out of here. So that's why I think he didn't do that, because he needed the spark to spread, which means you need witnesses. So that's my fan theory. I could be radically wrong, but I think it makes sense from a Jedi point of view.
I don't know, maybe you guys cover tomorrow. I won't be here, but I'm just kind of curious, like, what's your angle on the position of the Jedi is generally accepted as good for everybody, but they use mind control and force powers to get their way, even with people who are, you know, like, secure, you know, this is not the guy you're looking for, stuff like that. I mean, that's the Jedi who's technically interfering with law enforcement, right?
That would require acknowledging the Empire as a legitimate government.
It is.
Yeah, but so were the Nazis, but we'd be okay with saying, no, we're going to get you out of here. So when you have a totalitarian state, look at Stalin, look at East Germany, look at Mao, look at Pol Pot, you know, people that are, you know, predicated upon violating human rights, you know, resistance is proper. So I don't have a problem defending that.
What about the role of the Jedi during not the Empire, but the Republic?
God, this is where bad writing comes into play. So it hurts so bad, because Rocket Jump posted right before Last Jedi came out how Star Wars was saved in the edit, because what George Lucas wanted to release was an abomination. His ex-wife rightfully won that Oscar, because it was Luke in a floppy hat. I mean, it was horrible. It was we would not be talking about it 40 years later. It would be, it'd be in the Dust Bowl of history with Silent Running. We wouldn't, yeah, great movie, but we wouldn't care about Star Wars still. It'd be like Black Star. So, anyway, it's really hard to say because the writing's so bad, but it's like the religious guys used for law enforcement.
No overseeing.
Yeah, it's just, it's so messed up. It's so messed up. And, you know, when they realized Palpatine's Sith, the Jedi should not have just mounted up to go arrest him and take over. They should have done a special prosecutor and gone at it that way, because there should have been data and other things to show communications. There should have been a way to prosecute, to show, because you want the Senate to know that the leader has to be replaced, not commit a coup d'etat.
And why does he have to be replaced? Should have freedom of religion? Oh, I'm sick.
There's that, but when it's, I've committed fraud upon the Republic in order to cost billions of lives.
See, that's different. But him just being a Sith, that's what they could prove at the time.
No, but it's the treason that he committed in orchestrating the Clone Wars and managing the Separatists as well. That's the problem.
Bad writing, but all they could prove when they went to kill him was that he is a Sith Lord. That's all they knew.
That was the wrong way to handle it. They should have gone to Bail Organa. There should have been a whole bunch of other things that could have happened. But we didn't write that story. So anyway, thank you all.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow for other ones. Thank you.